Long time since we spoke to Ian Furr, the founder of Sorbet, the chain of beauty salons, which have had a really tough time this year, like everything else, because they have not been able to operate for much of the year. And now there are lots of strict conditions under which they can operate. But hey, they're managing. Sorbet, as I've seen operating, who seem to be doing well. But the man who founded the beauty chain Sorbet sold it to Brian Joffe's Long for Life, and soon after that left the company. But you can't keep Ian down. He started in the middle of this year the Hatch Institute. What is the Hatch Institute? Well, let's let Ian Furr tell the tale. Good to have you back on the radio, Ian Furr. Welcome to The Money Show. The Hatch Institute, it's all about culture. How do you manage, how do you teach culture?
Hi, Billy Swifty. Thanks for having me, and it's good to be back on the show again. Well, culture, and in fact, I've developed a word for it. It's called culture-nearing, which hopefully you'll find one day in the Oxford Dictionary, but not yet. Culture-nearing really is about trying to create a strong culture and a diverse workforce which will lay the platform for exceptional customer service, etc. So what I'm trying to say is that if you don't have a strong culture, then good customer service is unlikely to materialize, and that the customer experience will never be better than the staff experience. So culture is everything. People say to me, but what has culture got to do with the bottom line? And I normally answer to that, I would say culture is the bottom line. You know, if you're not able to produce a strong culture, especially in a diverse workforce and a diverse society where we have all kinds of issues, particularly with things like racial polarization, if you can't actually create something strong and have a sense of belonging and a sense of fairness and fair treatment and being treated with dignity and respect and trust, etc., it's highly unlikely that the customers are going to get the kind of service that they need. So culture is everything, really, in my view, in terms of business.
But you can feel it, can't you? I mean, you walk into a company that's got particularly into a consumer-facing business, and if there is a rotten culture in the business, if people are operating on fear, if people are not empowered to make decisions, if people are sort of looking over their shoulders, or the moment you say, could I have a drop of milk in my tea, and they kind of look to a manager to see if that's okay, you know you've got a culture problem.
Exactly right. You know, if you don't have that, as I say, if people don't actually come to work with the understanding that the purpose of work is to serve people, the purpose of business is to meet the needs and expectations of your customers, and you don't have the core values to support that, then it's highly unlikely you're going to be successful, and the elusive objectives of making money quickly and success are going to be eating away at you. So it's really important that you get a strong purpose, a sense of purpose in an organization, and that you understand why the business exists in the first place, and that everyone in the organization is aware of that and is aligned with that. So you create a common purpose where everyone comes to work for the same reason. And unless you can do that, it's very, very difficult to be able to go out there and meet your business objectives.
And not to play down what you're doing here, but you're kind of putting into a new business what you've been doing for the last 40 years, I think. I mean, from what, you know, the books I've read about you, the books you've written, talking to you many, many times, you've kind of been doing this stuff practically for an awfully long time.
Yes, in fact, since 1976, when I was about 22 years old, and that's how I was introduced to business as an entrepreneur for the first time. And I found myself, you know, involved in a business where you had mainly black staff, mainly black customers. And I had to learn very quickly that, you know, I couldn't change them into my culture. And the best way was to try and understand the culture of the people, really. And so with that, I was able to then understand that I needed to change my management style, my leadership style, and to create what I now call a culture-driven leadership style, which is a bit like servant leadership. But it takes into account the complexity and the volatility of the South African landscape, which in these days is very, very volatile, highly complex. And if you don't understand what's happening outside of your business, you will start having a problem inside your business because people come into your company from different backgrounds, different views, different beliefs, different everything. And you can't just expect everybody to get on and just kind of business as usual. You need to understand the issues and differences and what has caused the kind of systemic racism that we've had over the last 300 years and the impact of that on business and culture. So there's lots more to leadership now than there ever has been before.
I mean, when companies have got a bad culture, a toxic culture, a negative culture, a rotten business culture, can it be fixed? I mean, is it possible to fix it without a wholesale gutting of the organization, taking out management teams and middle management layers, and essentially destroying, you know, running the risk of destroying the fiber of the business?
No, I don't think that's absolutely necessary. I think what really important is about being able to shift mindsets. You need to be able to change people's views and get them to look at themselves and get involved in a bit of self-discovery and understand that change is necessary. Unfortunately, a lot of companies and people suffer from what I call paradigm paralysis, which is the inability to change your thinking and your views. And so we need to have these uncomfortable conversations with people where they need to understand that they have to look at themselves and see if they can transform themselves before they can think about transforming everyone else. So that's why it's quite important that we have the sort of personal development as well, the coaching that goes with the leadership, to get people to look at themselves, you know, try and identify those things that are blocking their future, whether it's their ego, whether it's their upbringing, whether it's their past, all of the different paradigms that have set into to people, and to discover their unconscious biases and then try and start to change the organization from there. So it starts at the top and it starts with the leadership, and from there you can try and sort of cascade it down through the organization.
How sick are South African organizations right now, in your view, from a culture perspective?
Sorry, how?
How sick are South African companies from a culture perspective, in your view?
I think they are not really involved sufficiently. I don't think they realize the importance of culture, to be honest. Some companies do, obviously, and I'm not kind of generalizing here, but as far as I'm concerned, like the diversity training that is done, which is great, it's not always deep enough to get really to the root of the problem and the need for change ultimately. So that is where we need to focus, is to get people to firstly understand what the problem is, and that racial polarization, particularly in South Africa, is one of the biggest challenges we face, because it affects service, it affects productivity. We don't rank very highly on the productivity scale in the world. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we cannot build strong cultures in a racially polarized society. And
Peter,
need to understand that.
Peter Drucker, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And I never really, I mean, it took me a while, I think, to understand it in terms of the importance of culture, because, you know, culture underpins absolutely everything within organizations. And very often it is the last thing anybody looks after, especially in a time of crisis and especially in a time of massive economic and financial hardship.
Exactly. And most companies just put culture on the sideline and say, okay, let's tick that box. You know, that's the soft, fuzzy, wuzzy stuff that nobody really cares too much about, but we better just have it there just in case anybody checks in on us. But at the end of the day, as you say, culture cannot be extricated from anything in the business. It should be a central part of the strategy from day one, because virtually every strategic decision that you make will be undermined if the culture is not right in the business. And I always believe that, and I've been doing that and saying that for 40 years now. And I believe that I've been able to prove that in the various companies that I've run over the years.
How often when you go into a management team and you look around the table and you start talking to them about culture, do you see eyes rolling into the backs of people's heads and people going, oh, goodness me, here's another consultant. Make it stop. Because, you know, a lot of people don't realize they've got a problem until it's too late.
Yes, indeed. But I think people are starting to recognize the need much more now, because you can see the things that are going on in society at the moment, particularly, as I say, on the diversity issues and the race relations and what's going on all over the world with race relations. People are starting to understand that maybe this is something that needs to be checked on now, because it does have the potential to undermine virtually everything that's going on in the business. You know, I've had lots of examples over the years where productivity was severely hampered because of the management style of an organization. The way they treated people was exactly the way that people treated their customers. You know, I'd go into a supermarket one day and look at the cashiers, and they just don't seem to have a smile on their face. You know, and I'd walk in and I'd say, you know, are you okay? And they'd say, yeah, of course I'm okay. I'd say, well, are you happy? They say, yes. I said, well, then, if you're happy, tell your face, you know. If you're happy, tell your face. That's what you need to be doing, to be telling everybody out there.
If you're happy, tell your face. Ian Fur, thank you so much for chatting to us this evening. The founder of multiple businesses. In the 1970s, started a business called Kmart, caused havoc in downtown Johannesburg. Security police hated him. Ended up going to John Foster Square, it was known then, to answer questions as to why he was putting black people in management positions. He then ran a training company for many years, then realized that actually there's a gap in the beauty market, because hundreds of small beauticians, but nobody, no sort of central cultural identity. And so he started Sorbet and then sold that to Brian Joffe. And that he didn't stay there very long after that. And now has hatched a new institute. It's called the Hatch Institute, looking to help companies change culture. Fascinating insights from the man who defined culture in multiple organizations in his career.